Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com. Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 332 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. We're back in the new year, 2018. I'm joined by Jason. I'm Trevor. I believe he has a rundown for us.
Yeah, on tonight's episode, we are going to be talking about three new films and three new trailers. The first film we are going to be discussing tonight is Bright, Will Smith's latest. Let's check in with that.
We will not be listening to no orcish music.
I believe that you're lacking in love, Ward.
I'm what?
By love, I mean, like, physical.
I don't need no physical love.
Humans have physical tells.
Tells, huh?
Yeah. It's called a face.
Well, I ain't making no face.
Like the face you're making right now.
I ain't making no face right now.
Oh, yeah.
So you know human face. You know him.
You got
a lot of them. A
lot of them.
Show me the face Orc makes when he just shut the fuck up, don't say shit, and just try to work. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Oh, you got that one.
All right, Bright is the new pairing of Will Smith and David Ayer after the somewhat success of Suicide Squad, and a few other members of that film pop up in this, Jay Rodriguez being one of them as well. For me, this was really Joel Edgerton's film. I think he does a great job as the Orc, and this is a sometimes amusing but mostly overwrought film that feels stale and like an imitation of a David Ayer movie. I was a little surprised to find out he didn't write this, and Max Landis is credited with the script, because this feels like Training Day meets Lord of the Rings, and whether it's such a silly MacGuffin with them chasing around after a magic wand. I really didn't enjoy the whole midsection of this film, which becomes a series of scenes where they evade one gang that's after them, and they fall into the hands of the next gang before narrowly escaping that gang, and it's too much of that, and it's too much action at some point, and I saw what they were trying to do, but ultimately a totally unsuccessful effort for me.
Yeah, I mean, I have to completely agree with you. I liked the first half of this movie, everything up to when they find the wand. And then once they find the wand, it's just boring as all hell, you know? It's really incredibly boring, yeah. And with such a huge budget, you'd expect them to actually do something with it, you know what I mean? And they don't do anything with it ever. They never really. I mean, one of the gags in this is that they're stuck in that area, right? The wand keeps them there, so to speak. And so, but why are they trapped there? You know, it's not used to any good extent. And you have such a big budget. They should have done something more exciting with the wand and the magic, right?
It was all too low key.
They just don't do anything with it. Yeah, they just kind of ride around, as you say, going from place to place, really without rhyme or reason for it, you know, and even the big emotional moments that happen towards the end of the film really fall flat because I didn't get to know these guys under these extreme circumstances. I didn't really feel like they necessarily came together.
Didn't you feel this was heavy-handed too? Seriously overly done with the racial metaphor?
No, I didn't. For most of that stuff didn't bother me too much. That kind of slid off and didn't bother me. I get why it's there. I understand it. I actually really liked the first half of this movie for a lot of that stuff, because it felt like, to me, it felt like I was watching a movie that was made inside of that world. You know, like I could imagine the orcs and the elves and the people and stuff going and sitting in the audience and watching this movie. It didn't call attention necessarily to itself, no more than any movie you would see like that today, which does exactly that kind of stuff.
We saw this in 1988 with Alien Nation. This is a poor imitation of that movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, I would say this is if you really want to watch a good movie like this, go out and check out Ozone by J.R. Buchwalter. It's a great little indie film from 1995, shot on Super VHS, looks fantastic, And it is literally this movie. It's about
you're a big fan of that movie.
Detectives, yeah, that go and there's a drug that's turned people into mutants, essentially into monsters, and they go through the dark, seedy parts of town in order to stop this stuff, you know. And that's exactly what this movie reminded me of, except with a $90 million budget. If I compare that to Ozone, Ozone's a way more interesting and better movie, and it costs practically nothing to shoot compared to this. I don't know. I really felt this movie's biggest issue is the script, by far.
100%.
I'm glad they're getting rid of Landis for the sequel. They're saying they're going to let Ayer write it, but I don't know if that's going to be any better.
Yeah, the whole – hold on. This is such a ripoff of Ayer's work himself. I mean, even he had to recognize when he's reading this, the reversal there at the end when the gang leader's son can't commit the murder because he was saved. Is that not straight
and
from Training Day?
It doesn't do anything. Yeah.
It was pulled straight from the Training Day playbook. And at that point, I'm just thinking, here we go again. This is no dare. And Will Smith is trying in this movie, and I like what he's doing. You know, he's very charismatic.
The acting's
once
great.
Again.
Let's just get that right off the bat.
Yeah, him and Edgerton
are
great.
But they do not give people enough to do. Yeah. Both him and Edgerton are great. Noomi Rapace is fine, too, but her character sucks. And Lucy Fry as Tika, as the girl with the wand. Her character's basically just non-existent. She's just there, you know.
Nobody
it's like,
has anything.
Why
to
the hell?
Do
what's
in
going
this movie?
On? Yeah,
it's sound and fury and not much else. And I can't. I mean, at this point, I understand why they're doing. There's 11 million people who watched it, so of course they're commissioning a sequel. And I like the fact that you can watch this at home. It was worthy of that. I would have been very upset had I saw this on the big screen. Mm-hmm. But as a Netflix original, I think it's arguably the best one they've done in a lot of areas. But it's also extremely derivative of a lot of better movies, and
yeah, it's not up to par with leading edge Hollywood stuff, even at this point, even from this year, you know. So that what more can you say for that? As you say, as Netflix keeps going, they're going to get better and better at this, and they're probably going to attract bigger and better talent, right? They've got Scorsese already now, and so hopefully they make better movies, I don't know. I don't know how anyone would read a script like this and not be bored when it turns over into that second act, and especially the second half and the third act are just incredibly jaw dropping, boring. I should be really excited at that point. We should be really getting into the world and seeing magic and seeing this girl who's trying to protect the wand and everything, and there should be some emotional connection there, and there's just nothing. I mean, right from the moment I guess I don't want to give it too much away, but there's a moment where Will Smith kind of goes bad, maybe, but not really. You know what I mean? Right when they find the wand, that I thought, oh shit, now it's starting. Now we're going to start getting into this because they're going to have to top this. They're going to have to keep going up. This is awesome. This is going to be great. Nope, falls right. Just doesn't do anything.
Back to normality.
Nothing.
Yeah. It's totally a movie content to be mediocre is how I felt once we got about 20 minutes in. And that was not okay with me, especially because it was about 2 hours long. So it was a long sludge to that middle section to a third act that I didn't give much care about. And a bunch of interesting actors in this movie that aren't given a whole lot to do. But I do think Edgerton is the one to look out for here. Really good performance by him. But let's move on and talk about our second film of the night. What else we got?
All right. We got The Big Sick.
I don't know.
My
I
mother
think...
used to make best kulfi. Your grandmother?
I think ice cream is better than Thank kulfi. You.
No. What?
Oh, I wonder who that could be.
Yeah.
Let me check.
I'm guessing it's a young single Pakistani woman who just happened to be driving by our house, which is in a cul-de-sac. Wow. And I'm also guessing that the phrase dropped in will be said in the next 10 seconds.
10, 9, 8, 7. Go ahead.
Everyone, this is Zubeda. She just dropped in.
Salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
Come, please sit. Hmm. Oh, here, Kumail. For your files. Thank your you. X-Files. Because
Thank you.
That's your favorite show, huh?
Thank you so much.
The truth is out there.
It's from the show.
All right, this is Camille Nanjiani, I'm guessing.
Sure.
this is a Pakistan-born guy, stand-up comedian, who's come over to the U.S. With his family. And obviously when he was a kid, he's like a I don't know. He's basically American, right? But he's dealing with the fact that his parents are still Pakistani and still acting as if they're in Pakistan. And so he's kind of in a weird world where he just, I don't know, isn't – he's American in secret, right? Essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and other than that, he has to pretend like he's, you know, still in Pakistan. And he falls in love, of course, with a white woman. And his family is not going to love that. That's only, though, such a small amount of this whole movie as a whole. It's a really weird movie. First of all, the title, The Big Sick. I didn't know what this was about when I started watching it. I understood that. But I didn't realize that the girl he falls in love with actually gets sick and goes into a medically induced coma for the majority of the movie,
mm-hmm.
Which leaves Camille here to deal with her parents, Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. And I just don't know how to describe this movie. I thought it was really great, but I don't feel like you can sum this up easily. Is that just me? Can you do that?
I actually am conflicted about this movie because just hearing that clip you played, I'm smiling. And as the movie went along, I really enjoyed the part you were talking about, and I less so enjoyed the back half, which is the part with Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. I like Romano quite a bit in that. The Hunter character as written is supposed to be a little bit harder to like, but I just didn't care for that back half. It was a little bit too sobering in a lot of ways. I enjoyed the When Harry Met Sally kind of homages that were going on in the beginning at the batting cage and him, the meet cute, and the whole idea. I was interested in having real stand-up comedian in a stand-up comedian's, you know, movie about their life, because we had the comedian last year with Robert De Niro, which sucked because he's not a comedian. So I was like, oh, I'm kind of interested in how that all works out. And then, like you said, for the major part, she goes away, and I thought – what, is it okay to laugh here? Because there are some big laughs in this movie. I love especially the line about, you know, it sounds like she's in a good coma as opposed to a bad coma. Yeah. Because, you know, kind of like good carbs and bad carbs. That's a great line. There's a lot of zingers in this. And he's more appealing than I thought he would be. I'm conflicted on the movie. I mean, I'm almost want to say it's one of the best of the year, but I also can't really recommend it because it's so ungainly, if you understand.
Yeah, well, I think that works in favor of it, at least for me anyways. That's one of the reasons I really loved it, was it gave me everything that I wanted and expected right in that first act. And then going into the second act, it took a hard left turn and turned out to be really great and not necessarily a bad left turn, but really unexpected and just weird is the best I can say, because it's you almost want to see that Zoe Kazan character again. You know, you want to be like, why is he still like wanting to be with her? You know, I kind of forget, but you know, before she wakes up, it's like, come on.
I do like the fact that there was chemistry between those two actors, so you did buy that he cared about her, because that's very important to the success of that movie.
Of course, based on I guess true events. You know, his real wife and him wrote this together. Obviously, I don't think she actually went into a medically induced coma and got sick. I don't think that's real, right?
I'm not sure the extent of how true the story is, but based on the movie, I do like scenes that I hadn't seen before, like where the girl's up at 3 a.m. and she's trying to go to the store down the street to take a dump. You know what I mean? Like, that's interesting things that you normally don't see in movies. So I thought, well, there's a fresh angle on some of this material. And the Ray Romano stuff was really good at times.
Ray Romano's great as a dramatic actor.
When he tones down the dumb shit role that he normally does, you know, the doofus role, I would say.
Right.
He's just as strong as – I mean, maybe even – I would say more so than Sandler when he does the dramatic stuff, or even Carey when he does the dramatic stuff.
Well, he's great in Parenthood, if anyone ever saw that. But in Parenthood, he plays an older gentleman who's borderline autistic, and he's just great in it.
Huh. I don't watch the show, so I didn't see him on that. But this was my first really exposure to him in that. And I liked him as this. But you're saying one of the best of the year for you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I would say it deserves the praise. But it's just – it's not a movie that I can sum up easily. You know, it's really so long-winded to explain. And even my explanation of the first act there was long-winded, and I was struggling, you know, let alone to completely describe the entire film, because it's – there's just so much of it, you know, and it's almost like three different movies in one.
It's a lot of to digest in that movie, and it's not easily digestible, but it is funny in parts. So if you are looking for something different, check it out, because there's a lot of talk of it. You know, it was the highest grossing indie film of the year, and the screenplay, they're talking about possible Oscar nomination for that, which would be interesting because this isn't classically structured at all. All right, the next film we have on our list for this evening is, catching up on an older one, is Guy Ritchie's King Arthur Redo, The Legend of the Sword.
You've got the wrong man, sire. I was born in a brothel on a bridge in Londinium.
The sword can only be drawn by Uther Pendragon or his direct heir. You felt it, didn't you? The power. That's what put you out. You just don't know how to control it.
So what happens now?
You know what happens now. You're quickly becoming a legend.
All right, Guy Ritchie's revisionist take on this King Arthur mythology stars Charlie Hunnam and Jude Law as the villainous. I don't know who the hell he's supposed to be here in this movie, but this movie was so – that just goes to show how
– He's the uncle.
He's the uncle. I mean, this is the strangest King Arthur movie by far, and we have had a few strange ones. Excalibur, extremely aggressive, that was made back in the 1980s, and then the really boring kind of laid-back King Arthur movie that we had in the early 2000s with Clive Owen and Antoine Fuqua behind the camera. This one – is between the two, actually. I somewhat enjoyed this movie. At times, I really got into it. It takes a lot of liberties with this story, particularly adding dragons and all sorts of mythical creatures. It's definitely inspired by Lord of the Rings. But some of that works in its favor. And for the first time, Guy Ritchie's flavor of using this, showing, you know, explaining what the character's going to do and then doing it, which he used to distracting effect in the Sherlock Holmes movies, actually worked for me in this movie. And I was on the fence if I liked it or hated it for most of its running time. And in the end, I figured, shit, if it makes me feel that conflicted, I probably actually got something out of it. And I goofily think it's one of the silliest movies of the year, but I kind of like it. So I'm going to recommend it.
All right. I could. Yeah, I don't agree.
Yeah, it sounds like you couldn't get through it.
No, I got through it. Of course I got through it. This is the reason I don't like Guy Ritchie is pretty much summed up in this movie in total. There's a lot of sequences of just showing stupid shit that's just, I should be experiencing it, and instead I'm the film, right, is fast forwarding through this and that and everything else and doing weird cuts and trying to be, I don't know, hip in some way. I don't like his style at all. I think that he focuses on just in the wrong things, you know. And I gotta say, I don't know, the whole, once they said mage, which was right in the beginning of the film, I was pretty much out. It's just so stupid, you know. Oh, the mage. It's like the mage. Oh my God. Like, how many times are we gonna see movies like this? Like, this reminded me of the damn witch movie Warcraft, with Nicolas Cage and shit and all that stuff. Yeah, it's just like, oh my God, guys, this is, there's just no story here to support that kind of silliness, you know, which there has to be, or at least some sort of fun. And I really didn't find any fun in this movie.
I found a lot of fun. You didn't think any of these battle sequences, the training sequence in the beginning with him.
The battle sequences are terrible. Are you kidding me?
And
the training sequence is also terrible. No, the whole action in this is just god awful.
I thought there was something to be said for a couple of the sequences, the prison break sequence, if you will, when they were going to the gallows and they helped him out there. I couldn't tell you what character was who or follow this or that. This speaks to how frantic this movie is.
That's not a good review.
I had to put on the subtitles to follow who the fuck was talking to who. But at the same time, I put a goofy smile on my face and didn't bore me. And the Sherlock Holmes movies bored
the shit out of me. Are you kidding me? When he gets the sword and then he can't handle a sword. And he still can't handle a sword. And you can't, oh, did you look, did you watch the whole memory thing with your dad and mom getting killed? Did you watch it all?
That's a pretty good English accent. I didn't know you had the English accent.
Yeah. Yeah. Good fucking Lord, man. Like, just, like, he did watch it. Like, I saw it all. Everyone's seen it. We get it. The evil thing comes and it kills him. Like, I get it. I don't need to see it 800 times. Oh, did you watch it all? Did you watch it all? Can you do it? Can you do it? And finally he does. And it's just nothing. It's nothing. It's a stupid movie. It's terrible.
You're very aggressive towards Guy Ritchie's work.
I am, because it's a dumb movie. I mean, it's worse than Bright on every level. And Bright's, I think, boring as hell. But this movie, it just takes it to a whole other level.
King Arthur entertained me and Bright bored me. That's what I got to say about those two.
Well, they're both terrible.
All right, let's move on to the trailer addict portion of today's show.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All right, up first we have Alita Battle Angel.
Well, look at you.
May your dreams bring you peace in the darkness. May you always.
This is just a body.
It's not bad or good. That part's up to you.
I don't mean to be rude, but am I supposed to know you?
Actually, we just met.
World. The strong prey on the weak down here.
The sun shines upon you again. Hear this prayer in my heart.
Does it bother you that I'm not completely human?
And we'll never.
I'd do whatever I had to for you. I'd give you whatever I have. I'd give you my heart.
Alita, they will come for you. Someone very special.
May you stay in the arms of the angels.
All right, that was Alita Battle Angel. This is the new James Cameron written along with Robert Rodriguez and Rodriguez directed. Sci-fi epic, I guess, really. It does have that very James Cameron-ish feel to it, but at the same time, it also has a little bit of Rodriguez flair in there. I think the cast looks great. Could be very exciting, although we are clearly falling all the way down into the uncanny valley with our visual effects here. There are some shots in this that just really look like, you know, a game cutscene. But other than that, what do you think?
I would say, yeah, you summed it up perfectly. This has the feel at times of something that could be epic, but it reminded me also of that Final Fantasy movie back in 2001. I felt like it was a giant leap backwards in a lot of ways. She looks like a marionette puppet. I mean, this doesn't look intriguing. It looks too lightweight.
But it feels a little Spielbergish too, right? I don't know. I think Cameron and Spielberg probably, you know, very similar backgrounds, obviously from a similar time period. But it does kind of feel a little Spielberg-ish as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just thought it looked like AI specifically, but
yeah,
I thought that
or BFG or any of that kind of stuff, you know, that heavily CGI stuff.
For all the years I've heard about this project and what it could be and how it was going to be this huge, huge, you know, monstrosity when it came out on the level of Avatar, I'm a little underwhelmed by what it is and finally seeing a trailer for it. So,
yeah, especially since they weren't able to lift those visuals up to any extent. You know, as you said, this really does. And that Final Fantasy movie is over a decade old at this point.
Oh, a decade. It came out in 2001. I mean, it's like almost two decades old.
Almost. Yes. It's getting close. 2018. So and really that movie looks exactly the same as this.
Exactly. Yes. Some of the Robert Zemeckis films that came out that got trash, you know, Mars Needs Moms and stuff.
And they look just like this. Yeah, that Beowulf looks very similar and stuff. Yeah.
Polar Express, even, which has been on a lot, you know, at the Christmas time. So I was thinking about all these things as I watched that, which was not helpful for that movie and that trailer. Because unlike Ready Player One, which has a trailer that transports you, that trailer, to me, I'm looking at it and going, it's so movie-ish.
Well, and Ready Player One takes place in a game world. It is a game, so it can get away with that kind of stuff. This is a real-life robot person that looks like, you know, coming very close to a Pixar animation, you know.
All right, let's talk about our next trailer, which is going to be the 2018 reboot of the 2001 smash Ocean's 12. Or Ocean's 11, I should say, and then Ocean's 12 and 13. And this is called Ocean's 8.
Good afternoon, Miss Ocean. As you know, parole is a privilege.
It's a mistake. But it happened. And if I were to be released, I would... I would just want the simple life. I just want to hold down a job, make some friends... Pay my bills.
Even if this was possible, you'd need 20 people.
7 people.
Why do you need to do this?
Because it's what I'm good at.
How long would it take you to make 7 pieces of jewelry?
5 or 6 hours.
How long if I told you you didn't have to live with your mother anymore?
Less.
You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing.
Less. You
keep playing where you shouldn't be playing. What's your name? Name Ball. What's your real name?
8 Ball.
You keep thinking...
I'm gonna be really poor.
What if we could make all this go away?
Can I get
my watch back, please? And hers as well?
Sorry.
It's okay.
What he knows, you ain't had time to learn.
I am with my family. I told you not.
I'm in your garage.
Do you want me to tell you how big a job
is? No, I'm out.
I'll tell you how big the job is.
I'll be back before you know.
Can I come with you?
This is Mommy's very special work trip.
Weeks, the Met will be hosting its annual ball, and we are going to rob it, not the ball itself,
on the neck of Daphne Kluger,
valued at over $100 million.
It's $150 million, actually.
Revenge. It's a twofer.
That's just what they do.
Do not run a job in a job.
Can't we just go to this? Do we have to steal stuff?
Yes.
Is it genetic? Are the whole family like this?
Literally.
That's Gary Ruse's take on the 2001 George Clooney, Brad Pitt starring film, which was a huge hit with Steven Soderbergh behind the camera. And what I can say about that trailer that I like is that it looks like it's still in the same spirit and vein, even visually, as that Steven Soderbergh series. I don't know if this is going to be better than the Ghostbusters movie from a couple of years ago, but it looks like it lends itself to being led by an all more, you know, female cast. It's not so front and center that they're female. You know what I mean? It just seems like this could be any type of caper film. It just happens to be an Ocean's movie that they're throwing the tag on. I like what they're doing here. It's snappy. If the movie holds up to what this is, they could have a big hit on their hands.
Yeah, I agree. I think the minute you see the cast in action on this, just any idea of, you know, the whole Ghostbuster thing or any argument about an all-female cast just goes out the window, because Sandra Bullock is just picture perfect for this role. And her delivery, she just sounds like the leader of this gang of con women, you know?
Totally,
perfect. And the rest of the casting as well is just fantastic, you know. So I think this will be a great, and as you say, it's clearly an Ocean's movie. Clearly, just listening to the music choice for the trailer, you know, I'm good to see this. I think this will be fun. Maybe not a movie, you know, stands the test of time, but certainly a movie that will be very entertaining when you see it.
This was announced a long time ago, and I just thought, why? The entire time. And now I get it. It looks fun. It looks breezy, and it's a smart career move for Bullock, who really is the elder statesman of these actresses in a long – I mean, Cate Blanchett's been around and has the more prestigious background in terms of Oscar nominations and high-profile projects. But really, Bullock's the box office leader, though, out of all these people. She's a huge star for two, almost three decades now. And I just like that she's running this crew. I mean, like, she seems like the natural-born person
to do
this.
And the way
role.
They do that, and the way they've done these past Ocean movies as well, this is a perfect, you know, chance to get, if you look at the cast here, Kylie Jenner makes an appearance here. Oh, Kim Kardashian. Oh, how, you know, how crazy. Anne Hathaway is basically playing, you know.
Anne Hathaway.
So it fits, it just fits right into what the other movies have done, but in a more female-centric way.
And more organic than the last Ghostbusters reboot. Even though I somewhat like that film, it's not as glaring like that it was rebooted. It's but it's not such a glaring thing that it's like an all-new female cast.
That movie did feel pushed on you in a way like, oh, look, this time we've done it with girls. Whereas this movie, I don't know, when you see it, it feels natural.
I'll tell you what, the chemistry feels like it's more legit, to be honest with you. It's strange because all those girls on Ghostbusters were on Saturday Night Live together, so you figured they would be comfortable with one another, but it feels like whatever was going on behind the scenes or how that film was cut, and I haven't seen Ocean's 8, just talking about the trailer, but as it stands, they seem to have real chemistry in that film.
I agree.
What's next?
All right, moving on to the last movie here. We have the remake of Overboard.
Why am I even trying to be a nurse? I'm going to be delivering pizzas and cleaning carpets for the rest of my life.
No! You're very attractive for a carpet cleaning lady. Although you maybe could do something with your hair. Yeah. No, that's not it. It's your face. Yeah. Could you be a doll and get me a little snack?
You know I was just hired to do carpets, right?
You're fired.
I bet you haven't worked a single day in your entire self-absorbed life. Just pay me and I'll be on my way.
Nope.
He is the devil. I owe the cleaning company $3,000 for a new machine. And they fired me. Rich people, we get away with everything. Hello?
I don't know what day it is. I don't even know my own name.
Amnesia in our little town.
That's him. I have an idea that is poetic in its justice. I'm here to pick up my husband.
You really my wife?
For better or worse, baby.
I'm poor?
Yep.
Daddy. How come they don't look like me?
We had to use a sperm donor.
I'm sterile. Do it.
You're getting picked up for work bright and early.
I work?
Three jobs. Oh, I want a fake husband.
So we need to take him to the hospital?
I said, Bobby.
Nobody else do it like that.
All right. So, hey, they finally remade Overboard, a movie that has a very odd following, I guess. Really.
Every girl loves this movie I've ever known in my life. What are you talking about? Odd following. Half the world's population loves this film.
Yeah, well, that's an odd following. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. I never thought Overboard was that great of a movie, but I agree with you. Yeah, women go absolutely crazy for it. I don't know. I feel like this is going to be a blip on the radar, though, as far as for what the first one did. I don't think they're going to jelly go nuts on this. This looks pretty much like a run-of-the-mill comedy, although I do love Anna Faris. Obviously, she's naturally funny and fantastic. I think she's underrated. She should be in more stuff, but I don't know. This just kind of looks cheap to me. Am I wrong?
No, it does. It looks real cheap. And I agree with what you said about Anna Faris. The only thing I could think of other person to put in this movie would have been Kate Hudson for the throwback to the Goldie Hawn.
That would have been good, though, yeah.
You know, you think about the original, and while it was no world beater, it definitely was a charming 80s movie, and it benefited a lot between the chemistry that Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn had. I don't see any of that in this trailer. Now, they flipped the roles here, and they made the female character, the blue-collar worker, and the obnoxious rich person, the guy. But this is that Hispanic actor who's been in a lot of movies recently, like Safety Not Guaranteed, and a lot of these crossover films that did a lot of money here at the box office. So I guess he has a following, and I feel like this is kind of towards that following, if you will. You know what I mean? I feel like this is very guided towards one segment of the demographic and not towards any other, and this is going to be extremely forgettable and minor. And
what was the – I mean, it just feels very 90s to me. You know, that like the Reese Witherspoon movie that came out this year as well. It kind of seems like this is going to do about as well as that, as far as I'm concerned. And as far as interest level goes, I don't even know that anyone that would watch the original would look at this and think, oh, that looks good, right? It just doesn't seem to have that same level of charm.
There is a couple gags in here that work, but for the overall
it's not movie, laugh out loud funny.
No, and you know where this is going. You know the story, and this gets very heavy-handed, and I'm sure they're going to play that angle to the T in this version. Yeah, I don't think this looks very good at all. That's going to wrap up our episode tonight, episode 332. But you can get all of our last podcasts and our entire catalog on iTunes, Stitcher, TalkShoe, or wherever else you may be getting your podcasts from. Also go to MovieMavericks.com. We got all the old podcasts there, as well as reviews for all sorts of movies, new and old, and all sorts of articles. Check us out. We want to thank you all for your continued support and for listening week after week. We'll be back this year with a lot of new shows. Next week, we have a retrospective on The Beastmaster. And the week after that, we'll have another show full of new reviews and trailers. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!